Good afternoon. Thanks, Catherine. Terrific to be here, and great also to see so many people who have been instrumental in Project Acacia here today. I'd like to foreshadow today the key findings from this important piece of work. Project Acacia is our experimental project into how we can uplift the functioning of Australia's wholesale markets through the tokenisation of assets and money. But before I get into that, just a bit of historical scene setting. Seismic innovation in the way that assets and money move through the global financial system occurs rarely. My reading of the history of past episodes suggests that three enabling conditions stand out. First is a compelling economic value proposition from innovation that can be scaled to meet the changing demands of investors, issuers, and the global economy. Second is technology that is up to the task of making the system more efficient and more resilient. And third is public-private coordination to break through the inertia that often results from entrenched network effects in finance and to overcome coordination failures when the ultimate payoffs to reform might be uncertain and likely to accumulate only over the longer term. The last era to fit this characterisation was the transition from the centuries-old paper-based system of ledgers and money to an electronic system. As obvious as the benefits might seem now, this transformation did not occur overnight, nor did it occur without resistance from incumbents. So what happened? In short, the increasing demands of market participants simply overwhelmed the ability of long-standing market conventions to keep up. In the early 1970s, Wall Street found itself literally drowning in paper, so much so that the US House of Representatives Committee on Commerce and Finance convened a special inquiry to investigate what could be done about the so-called paper crisis. The result was that Wall Street turned to the latest cutting-edge technology of the time, computers, to keep track of the ownership of paper securities and confirmation of monetary settlement. This heralded the beginning of the end of an era where purchasing a financial security meant receiving a physical certificate in the post a week later. But even then, the electronic era took decades to embed. As late as the 1980s, just down the road from here, price discovery in our markets was still consisting of the scribbling of chalk on blackboards. Comprehensive reform took a coordinated push by the private and public sectors around the world. Industry developed new infrastructure to support electronic trading, clearing and settlement, record keeping and safe custody. Central banks overhauled their settlement infrastructure. And legal and regulatory reform streamlined rules for securities issuance and clearing and settlement licensing. Fast forward to today, and a key issue now animating policymakers globally is whether the tokenization of assets and money represents the next epoch-defining shift in the operation of the financial system or a more modest extension of today's electronic arrangements, more evolution than revolution. Now, the most fervent advocates of the view that tokenized finance and related infrastructure upgrades will be revolutionary emphasize a range of possible benefits. 24/7 trading platforms offering investors and issuers constant access to liquidity and improve collateral mobility, atomic settlement to reduce counterparty risk, efficiency and functionality benefits from programming tokenized assets and money to interact in predefined ways that are not currently possible, and cost and risk reductions for issuers and investors, resulting from a reduced role for intermediaries involved in manual tasks around reconciliation, asset servicing, and compliance. At the same time, there's more sceptical critiques questioning whether these benefits will be as profound as some claim and whether the challenges are understated. To name a few, the prospect that liquidity is fragmented across multiple trading venues or tied up in pre-funded trades, uncertainty about the scalability, security and resilience of underlying technologies, interoperability challenges with synchronising new and existing infrastructure, and legal uncertainties surrounding tokenized claims and the smart contracts that govern their programmability. Now, a few years ago, I posed the question of whether tokenized markets had a future in Australia, and if so, how new forms of money and infrastructure might support them. We set out to understand these issues through Project Acacia, collaborative research project with our colleagues at the DFCRC and industry, and supported by the Payment System Board and CFR agencies. Now, this focus recognised two things: significant global momentum building in this direction, and a recognition that dynamism in our wholesale financial markets has significantly lagged that in other parts of the Australian financial system, like retail payments. So let me cut to the chase on our main findings and the path ahead. First, we no longer see the main question as whether tokenisation has a future in Australia's financial system, but rather how. Our findings build on earlier work in suggesting the potential for tokenisation, when coupled with infrastructure design and payment system upgrades, to reduce risk while unlocking greater efficiency and functionality in our wholesale markets. Analysis recently published by the DFCRC quantified these potential gains for the Australian economy in the order of $24 billion per annum, and larger still if new markets emerged and second round effects are included. Now, to be sure, tokenisation gives rise to a number of issues that should be subjected to closer scrutiny, a point we've previously made. But we have seen enough now to warrant intensified focus on how some of these potential benefits might be realised in a way that's consistent with system-wide stability. Second, realising even a fraction of these potential benefits will require long-standing impediments to innovation in Australia's financial system to be addressed. As much as Project Acacia has revealed strong industry interest in tokenised finance, a range of factors have stymied dynamism in our wholesale markets to date. A lack of competitive tension reflecting entrenched network effects, risk aversion partly reflecting perceived legal and regulatory uncertainty, and coordination failures that have made strategic planning difficult. Third, unlocking a new spirit of innovation in our wholesale markets is beyond the scope of any individual institution, public or private. The coordination challenges are very real. If we aspire to unleash more dynamism in Australia's financial economy, to enhance our attractiveness as a destination for capital in the digitising global economy, and to strengthen our sovereign resilience at the same time, it's going to require a Team Australia effort. This will require all stakeholders to approach things differently. And in the background is the momentum already building in key financial centres. Witness, for instance, the sharp increase in tokenised assets internationally. Daily activity in tokenised repo markets in the US now approaching $400 billion. The SEC's recent rule change allowing the NASDAQ to facilitate trading of tokenised equities. And Clearstream's launch of a tokenised securities platform. To that end, the RBA will be partnering with other CFR agencies, the DFCRC and industry, in pursuit of an ambitious program of initiatives to better support responsible innovation. A focal point for this effort will be the RBA's exploration with the DFCRC into a new digital financial market infrastructure sandbox. This could allow industry and policymakers to build on the learnings from Acacia and smooth the path to practical implementation by providing a safe space for the testing and scaling of tokenised money, assets and new infrastructure in a longer-term, stage-gated environment. This exploration will commence following the review commissioned by the government into Australia's financial sandbox arrangements. So let me now dive a bit deeper into what Acacia was about and what we learned. Industry explored 20 use cases involving a range of assets, forms of money and settlement arrangements. Domestic and international participants included banks, custodians, fintechs, payment system and financial market infrastructure operators, fund managers, stablecoin issuers, and tech providers. Tokenized assets range from government and corporate bonds, repo, bank term deposits, to investment funds, trade payables, and mining royalties, among many others. Settlement was largely conducted in two forms of private money, stable coins and bank deposit tokens, as well as two forms of central bank money, wholesale CBDC and exchange settlement account balances. Private and public distributed ledger technology platforms were utilised, and a novel element of Acacia was the issuance of a wholesale CBDC onto external ledgers to help us better understand the associated efficiency and safety issues. But in the end, our findings extended well beyond tokenisation to include broader pathways to spurring more dynamism in Australia's wholesale financial system. So what did we learn about the tokenisation of assets? First, the intensity of industry engagement revealed to us a strong and growing appetite to explore how tokenised asset markets, how the potential of these markets could be realised, including through more creative use of market infrastructure. Project use cases highlighted several ways for value to be unlocked through improved capital efficiency via reduced settlement frictions and shorter settlement cycles, reduced counterparty risk, automation of the asset lifecycle management, and lower manual processing errors. They also showed how tokenization could open up new channels for funding and liquidity and the development of financial products and services that would be difficult or impossible to achieve with conventional forms of money and infrastructure. A second finding was that the project highlighted considerable industry interest in tokenizing fixed income and related assets. This is consistent with trends that we observe in the US and elsewhere. It's also in line with our previous analysis, highlighting that aggregate efficiency gains from tokenization could be material in existing markets because of their size, even if gains per trade are modest. And just as a case in point, the manner in which banks raise funding in term deposit markets, which accounts for about 15% of their funding, has changed little in a generation. Price discovery, placements, and confirmation continue to largely occur over a mix of antiquated technology like telephones, branches, email, and spreadsheets. And settlement is far from instantaneous. Now, there was also particular interest in the tokenisation of government bonds, given the critical role they play in the financial system as both a safe asset and pricing benchmark for other credit instruments. And it's for this reason that several jurisdictions, including the UK, are undertaking tokenised government bond pilots. A third insight on the tokenisation of assets was that industry generally viewed digitally native asset issuance as the preferred end state, reflecting the benefits of reduced reconciliation, streamlined custody, and increased programmability. However, the intermediate path of issuing asset tokens as digital twins, backed by an underlying asset on another ledger, was generally considered more realistic in the near term as tokenized markets develop. A fourth insight was the importance of interoperability between new and existing infrastructure and between systems that operate domestically and those in international financial centres. I'll return to the former in a moment. On the latter, I would simply note that reflecting Australia's status as an open economy, our financial markets strongly benefit from active participation by foreign investors. They keep the cost of capital for Australian issuers lower and liquidity in our markets higher than would otherwise be the case. Investors from the US, where tokenized markets are developing most rapidly, account for the largest source of foreign investment in our fixed income markets. A key implication, therefore, is that if tokenized markets in Australia are to scale, they will need to offer a safe and seamless experience for investors abroad. Just building a domestic walled garden won't do. More general insight was that for all of this interest, industry has been grappling with impediments to large-scale commercial adoption. A consistent theme was that further progress in commercialisation pathways will require closer coordination across industry, regulators, and government, a point that Catherine just made earlier. Greater legal clarity, including over the settlement over the enforcement of on-chain records and settlement finality were cited as important to unlocking private investment. And on the regulatory side, questions focused on the applicability of financial product designations in tokenized settings, how emerging digital FMIs fit within the existing licensing frameworks, particularly when the clearing function is eliminated in tokenized settings, and how prudential standards apply to banks' digital asset exposures. Let me now turn to the main insights relating to tokenized money. First, use cases highlighted that in the long run, locating tokenized assets and money on the same ledgers could yield the largest benefits in terms of efficiency and risk reduction. However, there are still a range of issues, policy, legal, and technological, that need to be interrogated before that vision comes to pass. And so this might point to intermediate pathways in the nearer term, where tokenized assets and money reside on separate ledgers, as today, but are able to seamlessly interact via so-called synchronization bridges. Indeed, some use cases found this approach to be more or less implementable today, and that it entailed minimal loss in efficiency compared with more advanced arrangements involving a common ledger. Second, the project revealed growing industry interest in the issuance of tokenized private money, stablecoins, and bank deposit tokens. The experience in the US and Europe has been that large banks are incentivized to issue deposit tokens when stablecoins are seen to pose a competitive threat and when commercial opportunities arise from activity in tokenized markets. It will be intriguing, therefore, to see if this pattern also emerges in Australia following the passage of domestic stablecoin licensing reforms and the growing circulation of stablecoins internationally. One possibility in the years ahead is that stablecoins and bank deposit tokens have complementary roles. Stablecoins playing a niche role in settlement for smaller greenfield tokenized markets, and bank deposit tokens having a more prominent role in larger markets. This would reflect differences in their ability to scale, and that bank deposit tokens build on the trust of existing bank deposits supported by a long history of prudential regulation and recourse to central bank liquidity facilities. A third finding was that the project pointed to a sequential role for central bank money and settlement infrastructure upgrades, one that could grow alongside the expansion in tokenized markets. Some participants found that more expansive use of existing fast payment rails via the NPP and existing central bank infrastructure could yield meaningful progress in the near term. An example was a synchronization mechanism to orchestrate delivery versus payment between tokenized asset platforms and RITs. I'd note here a similar concept actually already exists to support property market transactions in Australia, where titles and pre-allocated exchange settlement balances are exchanged. A wholesale CBDC was viewed by industry as potentially helpful, but not essential for tokenization markets to get off the ground, as developments in the United States had shown. However, as I've previously noted, and as the principles for financial market infrastructure allude to, if tokenized markets were to become systemically important, then the case for issuing a wholesale CBDC as the ultimate safe asset with potentially superior functionality to existing reserves would strengthen from a financial stability perspective, as would more material upgrading of central bank settlement infrastructure. I'll come back to this in a moment. So where do we go from here? Opportunities to uplift the functioning of our wholesale market should be seen, I think, in the context of our larger national challenges around a lack of economic dynamism and the need to shape international technological disruption in Australia's national interest. In this spirit, the final report on Project Acacia will outline a range of initiatives to be progressed by the RBA in conjunction with our CFR partners, the DFCRC and industry. And this approach reflects the overarching takeaway from Acacia, which is that stronger coordination across the public and private sectors is needed to ensure our markets are fit for the future. Tokenization by itself is no silver bullet, but instead might be seen as one element of an enhanced payments and financial ecosystem that better serves the needs of our economy in the digital age. So first of all, the RBA will explore with the DFCRC how a new sandbox could better support responsible innovation in wholesale markets. There's now a recognised need to move beyond short-term pilots towards longer-term stage-gated environments in which industry can better progress ideas to commercialisation and regulators can learn about new technologies and safely adjust policy settings if needed. The interaction of wholesale CBDC with bank deposit tokens and stablecoins and the synchronisation of tokenised asset ledgers with RITs will be particular areas of interest. Internationally, I'd note the synchronisation of asset and settlement ledgers is becoming viewed as a way of making practical, sequential progress ahead of larger investment commitments by industry and policy commitments by central banks on wholesale CBDC and overhauling settlement systems. We'll be seeking industry input on these issues, drawing on the type of functionality that already exists for property settlement and drawing on international insights from initiatives like the Bank of England's Synchronisation Lab. We envisage this consultation will feed into the RBA's longer-term work into options for RITS modernisation, which is aimed at ensuring our critical settlement infrastructure can support the evolving needs of the financial system well into the future. Second, the RBA will be reviewing its policies for entities accessing exchange settlement accounts to support competition and innovation in payments. We expect to commence this review once the first tranche of the government's payment service provider licensing reforms has passed the Parliament. And in the meantime, we're engaging with peer central banks to better understand the competition and financial stability implications from stablecoin issuers holding funds in central bank deposits. We'd note the regulatory framework for the licensing and prudential supervision of issuers of Australian dollar denominated stablecoins is an important pillar of the government's approach to developing responsible innovation in the Australian digital asset industry. And third, in recognising the substantial role that open capital markets and international trade play in the Australian economy, the RBA will also be stepping up its work in cross-border payments. This includes by exploring with peer central banks how new forms of money and settlement infrastructure could enhance wholesale cross-border payments. We'll have more to say about that this year. And we also plan to partner with CFR agencies and industry on other joint initiatives. For instance, we'll shortly invite industry to participate in a joint regulator industry tokenisation advisory group as an extension of the forum that provided valuable input over the past year. The objective here would be for regulators in industry to address remaining regulatory, legal and other challenges relating to tokenised assets and money that were first surfaced in Acacia. Industry have told us they valued the opportunity to discuss these challenges openly with regulators in one room. So we see this forum as a way to keep the constructive engagement going. Recognising the central role of our commercial banks in the safe and efficient operation of the payment system, an expanded version of the Deposit Token Working Group will also be convened. The aim here is to build on the progress of the related group and Project Acacia by developing practical solutions to support the interoperability of deposit tokens issued by different banks. Finally, the CFR agencies will convene an industry C-suite roundtable on the future of digital finance in Australia. This forum would be aimed at facilitating more regular senior level engagement on international developments as they relate to opportunities and challenges for the country in uplifting the functioning of our wholesale markets. So let me take a step back. It's impossible to foresee where technological change might take the financial system a decade or two down the road. Some innovations will break through, others will not survive deeper scrutiny. It remains an open question where tokenisation will eventually place here, but what I can confirm is that ensuring Australia's payments, monetary and financial infrastructure arrangements are fit for purpose in the digital age is a strategic priority for the RBA and the Payment System Board. So I'll conclude with two reflections. First, we could do well to draw on our history of financial innovation that has allowed Australia to punch above its weight on the international stage. Australia became the first country to develop modern polymer banknotes, an innovation that has since reshaped global currency manufacturing. Australia's pioneering superannuation system has grown to be the envy of many retirement systems around the world. In retail payments, Australia's fintech capabilities have long been distinguished by world-class innovation. And the introduction of the MPP nearly a decade ago encompassed functionalities that were on the global frontier. In different ways, these innovations all reflected the elements of scalable economic value, robust technology, and public-private engagement that I mentioned at the outset. My second reflection is that the path ahead I've set out today should be viewed as part of a larger effort by the Australian policy community to ensure our financial system is positioned for a more dynamic future. This includes the government's current review of Australia's financial sandbox arrangements and forthcoming licensing and digital asset platform reforms, and ASIC's analysis of regulatory and legal barriers to asset tokenisation, and its broader work program around strengthening Australia's capital markets. The bottom line is this: a financial system that is more dynamic and resilient to technological disruption is in our national interest, but it will take a Team Australia effort. Thanks to everyone involved in Project Acacia for being part of this journey so far. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Brad. Not only for that great speech, but also some terrific charts. I love a good chart. For anyone who has questions that you'd like to pose to Brad, there should be a QR code coming up on the screen behind us that you can use to submit questions to Slido. So, Brad, where do you think Australia sits globally in the development of digital money, tokenised financial infrastructure? And how will Project Acacia influence that position?
I think prior to Acacia, the general sense that I got from engaging with industry on this issue is that Australia was sitting some ways back off the frontier. I would say the totality of what we've learnt, the engagement that's been that's come to the fore across industry and regulators has now put the country in a position where that gap could be closed quite quickly if there is sufficient appetite. We've surfaced through Acacia a range of challenges that mean we now know what needs to happen to press right up onto the frontier, again, if there is appetite. And that appetite has got to be broadly shared. There is the industry piece of that. There's the piece for the regulators, and of course government has a role as well. So we're kind of all in this together, but I'd say Acacia has now set us up really well to close that gap if there is collective ambition.
Great. Well, I might turn to some of the questions because there's quite a few coming in. One of the first ones that's come through is, does the RBA see the opportunity for new market infrastructure operators to facilitate this sort of activity, so beyond the ASX or AusClear?
The bank has a very broad mandate in the system. The things that we care most about are competition, efficiency, and resilience. So to the extent that there is new sources of competition in any aspect, market infrastructure, or really any aspect of the ecosystem that is consistent with those outcomes, making our system more dynamic, more competitive, and more resilient, we welcome it.
So another question from the audience is that you've talked about many of the positive opportunities that can come from tokenisation and digital assets. There's some curiosity about the risks or concerns that should be considered.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we keep focused on those challenges and be clear-eyed about exactly what form they take. I think that the types of challenges, they actually fall into two buckets. One is, look, outside of tokenization, what could we do? You know, extension of trading hours and so on. Are there certain things we could do that don't necessarily require tokenization technology to come to the fore? But on the tokenization piece specifically, I think the main ones are on the liquidity benefits. Do you forego some or all of those if you have to pre-fund trades? That's a question that comes up. Related, if we end up having all these different ledgers around, does the same amount of liquidity just get fragmented into all these onto these different platforms? That's a challenge. There are ongoing questions, although I would say they're actually reducing through time as we've gotten our arms around them on the technology. So on the technology, some years ago, lots of questions about security, resilience, scalability. I feel like the industry globally has moved quite some ways to addressing a lot of those. There are still, I think, for central banks, big questions about issuing central bank money onto an external ledger, a ledger that it didn't have control of. That would be, yeah, that's not something that happens today. Mm. We deliberately set up Acacia to kick the tires on that, and we learned some interesting things, but there's open questions that central banks are starting to turn to around that side. And then finally, there are some outstanding legal and regulatory questions. I mentioned some of them in the speech, although, again, I would say over the course of Acacia, and this is the benefit of drawing in lots of expertise into the project, including having lawyers around the table, which was surprisingly beneficial, actually, if I can be so bold. It was actually terrific having their insights from the legal community weighing in. And one of the things that will come out in the final report more clearly is if there are certain issues that were surfaced in Acacia where industry would really value picking up and running with and doing a deep dive, and it could, outstanding legal issues around, say, smart contracts could be an example. If industry wanted to further pursue those issues, then I think you'd find a lot of support in between the CRC, ourselves, our CFR partners. We could think about, you know, what sort of support we could provide for those efforts.
So there's quite a few questions coming in about resilience, which I'll turn to in 1 minute, but just to choose one of the questions with quite a few votes, which has been asking whether banks have accommodated the tokenisation project, given of all the participants, they have the most to lose.
My sense is, from where we started out, the day before Project Acacia, I wasn't really getting any sense that banks were actively looking at the tokenisation of bank deposits. I mentioned in my remarks where we've seen banks globally really leaning into that space, principally the United States, to some extent Europe, and the reason for that, I think, is that stable coins are starting to circulate, particularly United States. Stable coins are being viewed by the larger banks as a possible competitive threat. And there's also activity starting to emerge of significant scale in these markets that banks can see, not just from a defensive perspective, but actually they can see commercial opportunities for them in providing products and services around that activity. The banks have really lent in over there. And what we've seen through Acacia is increasing engagement by the banks from a low starting point, but increasing engagement. And that's also part of the reason why we are happy to support this Bank Deposit Token Working Group continuing and, in fact, expanding after Acacia, because we do believe banks have a critical role in providing a form of tokenized money in the digital era. There's been enough momentum built up, I think, through Acacia that senior people are now getting engaged in a way that maybe wasn't the case previously, and I think that's good for the country.
So probably the most popular question is about opportunities that you might see for interaction between tokenized assets and existing payment rails, such as the MPP.
Yeah, one of the really interesting insights from Acacia, and I don't think we any of us really expected that's where we'd land, was that we could be waiting for a long time for some magical piece of infrastructure to pop out of thin air and solve all of our problems. In fact, the more realistic path to making progress that could compound over a period of years is using in a more creative and a more expansive way some of the infrastructure we already have. So the MPP fits into that bucket. There are a couple of use cases which tapped into the MPP rails and found actually it could replicate a number of the benefits that more advanced sort of forms of ledger and tokenized money and asset arrangements could produce. So if you think about putting one foot in, you know, in front of the next, we haven't squeezed the lemon hard enough in terms of what's possible with our existing rails. And that's where I think the concept of synchronization operators also could have a more profound role than we probably expected at the outset in helping the country to make incremental, measured, sequential progress to a better future.
Yeah. Well, if we can, just to finish up, just switch gears a little bit to your other role as part of the Council for Financial Regulators, or the CFR. You know, we're all experiencing and operating in incredibly dynamic and heightened geopolitical uncertainty, and the risk environment's just crazy. How's the work of the CFR continuing to evolve? And with, you know, a very significant part of the payment industry here today, what message about resilience and the work of the CFR would you like to share with the audience?
Yeah, it's an important question. This is an issue we've been working in the background on for a number of years now. I'd probably just leave you with two messages. One, I think it would be a mistake to view what's going on as cyclical. I would view the sort of disruption that we're now having to think hard about as structural in nature, and resource and prioritise accordingly. Second of all, there's always a risk when regulators or policymakers are talking to industry about risks that it gets interpreted as, well, this is another compliance sort of undertaking. A couple of things there. One, these sorts of issues connect to the broader national interest. And there can be occasions, and I think this is one, where the private interest and the national interest fully align. And so investments that you all decide to make in strengthening the resilience of your systems and your operations, I suspect could, in time, be viewed not just as in the national interest, but actually a source of comparative advantage. We know in surveys that consumers and businesses are more focused on issues around security and resilience than ever before. And I can absolutely see a future where the cutting edge of technology, and many folks here, you know, live on that edge, where businesses are competing not just on efficiency grounds, but on resilience grounds, where that having a more resilient product offering is actually a source of competitive advantage that's actually great for the country as well.
Well, it's a good note to end on. Brad, thank you for taking time out of your day to join us here and for sharing the insights from Project Acacia, and also that very important final message. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine. Thank you.